Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm joined today by my co-host, Chris Womack. Yes, this is Chris, and a remarkable guest we have today, Landon Turner, whose journey through athletics and beyond embodies resilience, adaptability, and the pursuit of new horizons. From the hallowed halls of Harrisonburg High School to the grand stages of the NFL, Landon's story is as multifaceted as it is inspiring. Inducted into the Harrisonburg High School Athletics Hall of Fame in 2023, Landon is one of the highest achieving football linemen in HHS history. He was a starter all 4 years, Super Prep All-America, U.S. Army All-American, Virginia All-State, and Parade All-American. At the University of North Carolina, he was a four-year starter, playing 52 games while garnering multiple accolades, including ACC Coastal Division Champs, 2014 All-ACC, 2015 Consensus AP All-American, and Outland Trophy Watch List as Best Collegiate Lineman in the nation. He was also awarded the Touchdown of Columbus Jim Parker Trophy for best lineman in the country, and Mel Kiper ranked Landon early recruiting as fourth best offensive guard for the 2016 NFL draft. In his professional career, he was a free agent in the NFL with the Saints, Vikings, Panthers, and Seahawks from 2016 to 2019. Beyond the gridiron, Landon embarked on a new chapter, transitioning from the world of professional football to the realm of software engineering and now in tech sales. Today, we have the privilege of delving into Landon's remarkable journey, exploring the highs, the lows, and the invaluable lessons learned along the way. Welcome to the show, Landon. It's great to have you on today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy Mother's Day.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. On a beautiful Saturday.
It is a beautiful Saturday. We're actually working remote today in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yes, we are, yeah.
Which is pretty exciting.
Crib.
Crib.
Also, none of my friends can hear that intro at all.
Why is that?
Because I will never hear the end of it. I will get a string of texts. Legend, King of Harrisonburg.
That's, you know. That's true.
Maybe it's a crown, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, it's so exciting actually to have you here today, because you haven't been on since episode one when I first started Virginia's for Laughers as audio only. And we're excited to bring on Chris Womack, your stepdad. And this makes, yeah, what's that?
Good to be here.
It's good to be here.
It is actually good for you to be here. I was a single mom when I met his stepdad, and we got married when you were 6 years old, and we have had a front row seat to all your highs and lows, and I'm really excited to get into this today. But before we do, we must give a shout out to the Braxton Turner family, because this is why you exist and where your size, talent, and athletic prowess comes from, that's for sure.
Yeah, I always say that if he had my DNA, I would have had to pay for college.
Hashtag facts.
Kicker, I don't know. Yeah.
Hey, probably would have been healthier.
Yeah.
I tell you, that's one of the best jobs.
Yeah, that's right.
How dare you?
That's right. Yeah.
So it's really fun. I would like to actually start, we call our listeners laughers, and I would like if you could just share with the laughers the football legacy that you come from with the Braxton Turner family, and tell them a little bit about that.
Certainly. So laughers, I do come from a football family. It is true. My uncle was Jim Braxton. He played for the Bills in the 70s, played at West Virginia. He's got a Braxton Tower. Is named after him, I think. Honestly, I've never really verified that. It seems like it, and all his stuff is in there.
I'm pretty
sure it's the truth.
Yeah. That is correct.
Okay, making sure, because I would hate to just keep that in there. You know what? I don't care if it's true. That's my reality. Got a dorm named after him. Not a bad cousin that dad played at West Virginia. in the 80s as a linebacker. I had a cousin play there in the 2000s as a receiver. So we filled out the team over time. You know, I've got cousins that played at Duquesne, Kent State, IUPUI. Sorry, Nate.
I'm Uwe Pewee, sure as it's called.
Yeah. Is that what it's actually called?
Some people call it Uwe Pewee.
Yeah.
Because of the acronym. But yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I would love that. Really?
That's not official by any stretch.
I hope not.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. It's
I just, hope not.
In academia, we have called it Uwe Pewee.
Okay.
And that's about as funny as we get in academia. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure any cousins that are also were also somewhere that I've forgotten. I'm sorry. I love you. Anyway.
And I am sorry to the Uwe Pewee community.
Let's get ahead of that right now.
Right. IUPUI. I will call it that from now on.
I expect a lot of backlash on social media.
Yes. Yes. Well, something happened recently, even though you've been done playing for a few years now, but your accolades continue because last fall you were inducted into the Harrisonburg High School Hall of Fame, which was really cool. We had the privilege of being there. It was a special weekend for us, but why don't you share like your main takeaways from that experience?
Man, that was a special weekend for me. A lot of friends, family congregated on the weekend. Had a lot of fun. It was great to see, you know, I mean, it's a lot of football is less about the X's and O's and a lot more about the camaraderie and bridges that you build in the locker room. It's a very unique and something that's not captured much else, if anywhere else, in my opinion, in life. So in the amount of relationships I still have, I mean, me and my friends, you know, especially UNC guys joke about this, you know, shout out Mac Brown, but it's not a 4-year decision. It's a 40-year decision. We'll throw that around facetiously, but like there's some real heart and truth to it. And like, you know, we'll joke with it, but it's always like intentionally endearing. And that's at every level. That's been at the high school level. That's been at the college level. It's been at the NFL level. You know, I just a couple weeks ago, I called one of the guys that was a rookie with me. He called me because I'd gotten into sales, and it's just like we just caught up like it was nothing. You know, like we're just starting over again. And that was all that context was. It was the spirit of that weekend is having so many of my high school teammates around and catching up with everyone and getting to cut loose with the coaches now that we're adults afterward was a lot of fun as well, you know. And it was special. You know, I didn't do it by myself. I had a lot of help. Couldn't have done it without you guys. I couldn't have done it without, I know they're probably cliche or not, like I really couldn't have done it even without my friend's support. Like, you know, shout out Zach Dean. Even wore a shirt full of my heads.
That was wonderful. Sure.
It was insane. Right. It was a completely unhinged move. Yep. And for audio and video, I don't have the shirt. Just trust me. It was a picture from his wedding, actually, which was a week in Cancun. And there was all inclusive. There was tequila dispensers in the room. You know, I was feeling it. My cheeks were a little red. I had a very brownish red thing going there, and he captured that and put the face. I think there had to be like over 100 faces smiling.
I do have a picture of him in that shirt, so maybe we can include it in the final edit.
Yeah.
This might be coming y'all's way. You'll be able to see
that's
it.
That's a great, yep. There and for post, there it is. Look at it in all its glory. No, it was great. And that's the spirit of it. It's like, we got to, I appreciated getting into the Hall of Fame, and I appreciated the recognition for the efforts and what I was able to do at Harrisonburg, but football's a team sport, you know, and that's the best part of it. And it was just really special to be able to go out and hang out with friends again. And it was, for me, it was like, I'm honored, but it was also a great excuse to just catch up with everyone and
reconnect,
you know, get out on town, have a good time.
Yeah, they really did a great job, and it's nice to see your name up in the basketball arena with all the other Hall of Famers, and it was really a special weekend. Uh-huh. It was a nice time of reflection of how much you did accomplish during that time. And then you journeyed on from high school to the University of North Carolina, Go Tar Heels.
Let's go Heels.
That's right. What are some of the biggest lessons you learned in transitioning from high school athletics to collegiate athletics at the Division I level?
That is a good question.
Thank you.
A broad one.
Yes.
A good one.
Yes.
Some good lessons. There's a lot of good. It's a very humbling experience. I don't remember all the our first episode podcast. I don't know if there was a similar question. So if I'm repeating the story for listeners, one, I did used to hit my head for a living. So bear with me. It was a humbling experience, and one of the biggest learnings was like, I'm never, no matter what level I get to, like when I get to that next level, I haven't proven anything yet. I haven't earned anything yet. I think to synthesize it down and just give you like one solid answer is it immediately immersed me in the, like, I need to be constantly cognizant of what I can do to be better every day, not get complacent or content with where I'm at. What can I learn? You know, there's gaps somewhere, and how can I shore those up, you know, and lean into that. For example, my very first practice, I enrolled early. I was 17 in spring ball.
Crazy.
I think back on it.
Yeah. So I'm stepping on this field with, you know, guys all been through their strength programs. You know, even the freshmen, it was a few freshmen that came down for that. We were doing one-on-one run blocking drills with the defensive line. And I remember Quentin Copels, who was a first round, who's a senior that year, I think.
Yeah.
And he was a first round draft pick, and he called me out, you know, and I was like, all right, like, I know this is going to be tough, but you know, I was a U.S. Army All-American. Let me show, this is a chance to show, like, I'm here to stay. I got hyped up. Everybody's hyping up. We're like, let's go. He called me out specifically. And we lined up, and he proceeded to walk me back 10 yards. It was boys amongst men moment for sure. I just sat there and had to take it and just walk. I strained. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay. So this is where we're at. It was a humbling experience. Thank you, Quinn. My response from the response from that was like, I see where I need to go. I see where I need to be. And where I'm at right now is not here. And let me not waste a single second thinking, like, making up excuses, complaining about, like, well, that wasn't fair, or, like, I slipped, or anything else. It's like, man, I really got to get in this weight room. You know, I really need to get in
shape.
It
sounds like it was a bit of a wake-up call for you in terms of where you were and where you wanted to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We were at that practice. I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember that. You want to talk about that?
I just remember it was spring. I think it was my spring break. So we came down to visit you, and it was one of your first spring practices. So we were all excited. And I was like, I was less surprised.
I had to process it.
Guy was, like you said, he was a grown man.
He was just a 300 pound.
Yeah.
Monster.
And you know, and then we had watched enough UNC games where we have seen when that guy turned it on, he was, you're in good company of linemen that had a challenge with Quentin Copels, right?
Right. Not alone.
Yeah.
I'll start a support group.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Didn't you have braids?
Yeah, she had just gotten back from
I was in Honduras. Yeah. I was on an alternative spring break trip with James Madison really University students. And it was a
thing. Is that the freshman's mom? She had braids?
It reminded me of Michael Scott coming back from Jamaica with the rest from the office.
Like, what happened?
It's like, hey.
It was true. Yeah.
Hey, you got to try things, right?
You have to try things. Yeah.
I think you're pulling it off. Pulled it off.
Yeah. Probably wouldn't be fair to other people in braids if you tried it again, though. So you probably shouldn't.
That was good.
Okay, you pulled it off. But no.
sorry.
Your college career, though, I mean, you obviously did what it took to get better. Mm. And geez, we had a front row seat for that. And that was a lot of fun watching you just develop as a athlete. And then your senior year, my gosh. So you guys were, top 15 team. You won the Coastal. You came closest to Clemson that year in the ACC championship. I believe you guys came the closest to any team, including Alabama, to Clemson that year, who they eventually won the national championship. You were first team all ACC. You were an AP All-American. You win the Jim Parker Award. You were an Outland Trophy watch list guy. Actually came down to almost being a finalist, and that was really cool. And one of my memories is that beautiful Chapel Hill December day. I'm sitting there at your graduation in the Dean Dome, and we get a text that you had just made the AP All-American team. So parent, that was like I was like, this day, just freaking cement this day, right? I mean, like, my gosh, he's getting a degree from UNC, and he's AP All-American, and, but that's my memory. Does any of those awards more than others stick out to you and you value more, or are they just all kind of a big blended mixed blessing?
Sure.
Yeah.
They all matter to me. Mm-hmm. I'm honored and thankful. I worked really hard to be in that position, mm-hmm. and my friends know that. And like, I'd stay after practice, I'd lead OTA stuff. And I always took time out for just a second.
Sure. For those laughers who don't know what OTA is, what is OTA? Oh,
fair. Such a fair question. OTA, well, it's a buzz term. It's organized team activities. It's supposed to be run by the players. Optional. OTAs might even be like, we just player practices. I'm just going to catch all and just say like player driven, player led practices. We would do that in the spring. And there was a lot of work. There was a lot of work that I put into it. So I'm very proud of it. I'm very happy. And I'm very, very happy with my college career. One, it was a lot of fun. I had the best teammates in the world. I love catching up with them. They're 40 year decision again. Mm-hmm. We still keep in touch.
Great friends.
We won a lot, so of course it was fun. there's some things that I wish that had gone our way better. But there's not one of those that sticks out. It's definitely more of a blended blessing. Like, I'm very thankful and happy for it, but it's also like, whether I did or didn't have those, it's just the things and accolades, and I'm thankful for them, and I'd rather have them, of course, but like they fade, and it's something I look back on as like, that was a cool part of life, but it wasn't the it doesn't end there. That was not the peak of things. It was a peak, so that's kind of like how I view it. I'm like, thankful I have like the all ACC trophy back home and helmets, and those are really fun. Like, I enjoy the journey part of it a lot more, and I'm very thankful that I was like, that I did what I set out to do. They're just things and words and in places. It's definitely look back more on the, when I think of 2015, I don't think of All American. I think of like wrestling my teammates in the locker room. I think of settling disputes. I think of our Friday night traditions. I think of like all the different stories I'm not going to share. They're not that bad. I'm messing around. They're not that bad. But I think of all the like all the camaraderie moments, and those hold like, there's, I know it may sound cliche to some people, but those truly hold so much more weight to me than like any of those accolades. That I don't even remember. I can barely remember what happened in like any game, but I remember so much of the different funny things that happened on like bus trips, and like the highs of like victory, after flying back, and just enjoying each other's company. And like enjoying our shared success. I remember like clinching the ACC. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing about the game, you know. And I don't even remember getting any AP All-American texts, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I, you know, like really, I'm pumped about it. It's really cool. Yep. I will flaunt that. But I think it's more of a blended blessing. It's like, oh, those are cool things.
You mentioned, and you can ask questions too, of course, but you mentioned Friday night traditions. Can you share some of those Friday night traditions publicly?
We would go to, like, you know, it was a good, like, we'd have Friday, like a senior would speak at the Friday dinners and share like something that left, and like Schottmer, I remember distinctly talked about legacy. I don't remember what I talked about. I used to hit my head for a living. But it was like, you know, and you know, my buddy Alex Wines, a year before, even he talked about, you know, who we'd want to have in Foxhole, and it's like everyone here, like we would have those traditions. We would hear from our peers, and we would eat, and then once we were done eating, we had a thing in UNC where like Larry Fedora was the head coach. Old Larry, shout out. Hey Larry. He would take us to, they'd take the team. We watch a movie on like Friday nights. We would go to the movie theater every Friday night during the fall. You run out of movies to watch. So like some of them were just horrible. And it really like one of the tradition was like, can we get through this movie without us getting kicked out or this tradition ending? It was the amount of just the comments, you know, if it got bad, it was a snowball of just comments and class, just a bunch of class clowns. It was great. It was great.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, those are fun.
I love it. We're going to get into your transition journey to the NFL. But before we do, you know what else is significant in getting accolades in Virginia in the snack world?
Snack
world. What?
Wow. It's that absurdly flavorful popcorn from our sponsor, Preposterous. We just happen to have some here. Would you like to try some, Chris?
I would love to. This is my favorite popcorn. This is my favorite snack, to be honest with you. I'm a very low-carb guy, but you can't remove my Preposterous popcorn. It's just not going to happen.
It's so good. Have you ever tried it before, Landon?
I've eaten so much popcorn.
It's so good, isn't it?
Several times. I ate half of this. You told me I couldn't.
Right.
I'm gonna be honest, I was really angry this morning. Come to my house and tell me I can't have this preposterous popcorn.
So I told him this is a gift for being on the show, but you can't have a drop of it until we record today. And now here we are. Yeah. What do you think? Was it worth the wait?
Finally. That's what I'm thinking. Preposterous. Embrace the absurdity.
Embrace the absurdity. Their kernels are grown right here. It went down the wrong side of the throat, people.
Which it doesn't typically do.
Right. And fair enough. It has something to do with the fervor in which you are consuming them. I guess
you're speaking more than the popcorn.
Mm-hmm. And their kernels are grown right here in the valley. Their factory is 100% nut-free, and their Shenandoah Valley's only award-winning popcorn. They received Virginia Finest trademark as having the top quality Virginia specialty crafted food. It's a perfect gift for any occasion, birthdays, anniversaries, literally anything you can think of. Plus, laughers get a 15% discount when they use promo code LAUGH15. Just visit preposterous.com today and use the code to get some of this delicious popcorn. And you can join us on next week's episode, Munching on Some More. The website is preposterous.com. That's PreposterouS.com. And now we're going to get into this NFL draft process. It is often filled with so much anticipation and uncertainty. And it was for all of us as a family a surprise on how it turned out, because by all accounts and experts in the NFL and all that know about professional football, You were, including your agent, expecting to have you drafted somewhere between the second and fourth round, possibly fifth round. The anticipation of becoming a free agent or falling off the draft boards wasn't even in the realm of anyone thinking that was going to be a possibility at all. And that is what happened to you. Could you walk through with us your experience during the draft and how it has shaped your perspective on resilience and perseverance?
I see. Yeah. This was Laughers. This was laughing. yeah, I don't love the draft. You know, it's a great weekend for a lot of people. I did have high expectations. I didn't have the combine that I wanted going into it. I'd like pulled my hamstring almost like bad doing the 40 at the combine. Mm-hmm. Wasn't able to participate in any of the drills. And, you know, as like a bigger person, you know, even like for linemen standing, like NFL line standards, it was, you know, the question was always like, do you weigh light enough to move fast enough? Which, you know, whatever, it was just right. Ridiculous. But that was a question that really wasn't answered by any big decision makers of any kind. So, you know, speculatively, I think that had a lot to do with it. It was frustrating. I tell people I'm very glad I didn't invite a lot of people to the draft. You know, the first night was just fun. Like, yeah, I'm not getting drafted first round. Like, that's not a question of confidence. That's just a question of, you know, this first round is just different. That's high. And I wasn't there, especially like with the position I played and where I was at. And that was okay. Like, I was fine with that. Then, you know, the second day, second, third round, I was like, well, okay. I thought, you know, I was getting calls that made me feel like this was going to happen prior to this. And it didn't. And then the fourth and fifth round go by and it's like, yikes. And I'm just sitting there uncomfortable. With like friends and family, and it sucks, right? Like you have this expectation and then like the expectations down and like it's not like coming to fruition, and like you're surrounded by friends and family and like they can see that. So that, like, the energy was rough and is what I'm getting at here, because, you know, it was kind of a negative feedback loop there. Then, you know, truly like I didn't just play, like I was proud to represent Harrisonburg. I was proud to be a Tar Heel. You know, and like I was played football for myself, but really like only to an extent. You know, I was still had a lot of maturing to do with like what does Landon want and like name life. I wanted Landon very much himself wanted to play in the NFL. I'd wanted to do that since I was six. Yeah. Right. And like, and I say it in third person. Cause that's a different, it's a completely different me than it is now. And you know, at that time it had lacked the maturity to be like, hey, it's a, like, you're not letting anyone down by not like, and having like my friends and family there, like it wasn't, the expectation wasn't just for myself. It's like, I was carrying the expectations of the entire town, the entire, like all of my classmates, all my family. Right. And like, I wanted to succeed for myself, but, and truly even more, like I wanted everyone to be proud of me no matter what. Yeah. Right. And like, I couldn't, it's like, I'll be 31 next week. I'll be 31 next week. And now it's like, oh, like they're just, you know, everyone's there to have you, like to support you. But, you know, as a 21, 22 year old, I was sitting there thinking, is like, well, like how can, you know, I was supposed to do this. I was supposed to be here and accomplish this. And I didn't. And any rhetoric of like, hey man, we're like proud of you, is just like, it started to feel like empty words. And like the truth, like I was convinced like the truth was like, I fell short and I let everybody down here. And like as each name ticked across and like each name that I saw, that I was like, come on, that guy, come on. Yeah. Like, he's not a bad player, obviously he's getting drafted, but like, give me a break. Like, you want a good one or like one of the best ones? Like, come on. Because the confidence never wavered.
Yeah.
Never once. It was just, yeah, like the emotional toil was this like huge weight that like I don't only let myself down by like making like missteps that were out of my control, frankly, too, throughout the combine process. I let everyone at here, like at HHS down, I let all my friends down, I let like my family down, because I had this thing that was supposed to happen, and I was supposed to do like this. I was supposed to have this life and like and step proudly. It didn't. And, you know, shout out to dad for this one, because I think dad during the draft was like the most in tune with where my head was without saying a word. You know, and I remember at one point I'm like, I must have had like 1,000-yard stare, you know. And he just goes, hey, let's go take a walk, man. I looked at him and like without hesitation, I was like, yeah. He's like, take your phone with you. And I was like, will do, just in case. You know, we walked around the neighborhood for a good while before we returned. And I'm very thankful for that, because it was like, you know, like that weight. It helped take the weight off, just to like remove from the situation and see. And at the end of the day, nobody called until 5 minutes after the draft, and I had the choice between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Saints. Not the Chiefs that are here now. You know, shout out Andy Heck.
Yeah.
Truly one of the best O-line coaches in the NFL to do it. And I really like, I mean, his son was the right tackle when I played, and we were roommates like through my whole college career. Like that's my boy for sure. I mean, like I would have loved to play for his dad. It's just looking at, long story short, it was just like fit wise for who I was and body type and who was leaving and going to would probably leave in the next few years. New Orleans was the right choice. So about 5-10 minutes after the draft, I went, signed as an undrafted free agent with a fat signing bonus of $3,500. You know, could afford rent and for 1 month in some downtown area. In 2024, I'm sure it was cheaper then.
And then you went on to make the team. You made the 53-man roster as a rookie, as an undrafted free agent. To me, that is one of the more underrated accomplishments of your career. Mm. That is so hard. There are guys who get drafted that don't make the team. Yeah. And, you know, that they invest more in terms of a bonus and everything. And you made a good team as an undrafted free agent. And, you know, Lynn, I was, as a Tar Heel fan, I was watching a little YouTube clip of Drake May's first day as a Patriot. And he got flown into Foxborough on Robert Kraft's private jet. And they had lit up the stadium and it said, "Welcome Drake May," as the plane flew in. Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's different. You know? That's different than us going to the sporting goods store in the mall in Harrisonburg and buying New Orleans Saints stuff.
As a hopped on coach to
exactly,
fly into airline drive.
Exactly. And then, me driving Hilton, you to Charlottesville to that airport. But, so, you know, there's obviously a contrast depending on whether you're drafted, where you're drafted, or whether you're an undrafted free agent. What are some of the specific challenges of making the team as an undrafted free agent when you seemingly have a lot going, you know, against you that you can't control?
Yeah. What are the challenges? I mean, the biggest challenge is you're the cheapest to get rid of. There's not a whole lot of investment in like you being there. And that was a big, you know, shout out to Jack for this one. I think that Jack Bechtel was my agent. And we talked about it after the draft and like we had to make a decision soon. And a big reason why we did is like the team need and what they didn't fill during the draft and like who was there. Jari Evans, which, I mean, if he's not in the Hall of Fame inductee, like honestly, I don't keep up with him. If he's not in the Hall of Fame yet, he's going to be. That was like great dude, even better football. Well, other way, actually. He's great football player, even better dude. That was a great locker room. I loved all those guys. That was got really blessed with like another set of like just an awesome offensive line room in the NFL. I don't know if that's the case forever. I can't say, you know, I didn't even stick around long enough at other places to like know that. But that was like, that's why we went. Cause there was a need, and there was like someone that, Jari and I had a very similar build and play style. Mm-hmm. So it made sense to go in and like it, that. The challenge is like, I mean, my signing bonus was they invested $3,500 in this kid from Harrisonburg, Virginia to come try. Whereas like, you know, you got millions into draft picks, or at least tens of hundreds of thousands in some of the mid or late level picks. So that's definitely the biggest challenge is like, you know, and Sean was adamant that Sean Payton, the coach, was like adamant, like undrafted free agents can't make it. And the coach and the players and coaches also reinforced that, which is true. But at the end of the day, like it's the NFL is a business and they're playing sports, but you're also playing around with like salaries, which means that there is a bottom line. So you know, if you're an undrafted free agent, you're going to have to overcome that bottom line and like prove that their investment was bad in this area, you know, and that they like need to reallocate those funds to something that works. So that's for sure like the biggest challenge of it.
Yeah.
And I did not realize as a parent what that meant. The journey from falling off the draft boards and becoming a free agent, and really how uphill it was after the draft, which happened, I believe that was May of 2016, April of 2016. And then you go in and you're competing with not just the players they've invested millions of dollars in, those new draftees, but also the existing players and any other free agents that are out there. And at the end of the summer, it's a 53-man roster. 53 or 52?
53.
From 90. So for context, yes. And
10 practice squad players.
Yes, and 10 practice squad players. That's not a lot. And you're competing against the best of the best. And it is... They start dropping off and picking them and making the team smaller in August. And then the preseason, you get down to the wire. And then on the last day, that experience, I did not realize it was a great thing if you did not get called into the office. No news was good news.
Yeah. So Zach Strief was like, he's a 10-year vet, right tackle. Like that first August, I'm like, sitting at my apartment, like kind of tweaking a little bit. I was like, oh, what's going on? Like, just kind of had my phone with me. It's like, is it good if it gets called? If it's bad? I knew what the deadline was, which I think was like 4 PM Eastern time. So like something like that. So it would have been like 3. So I'm just waiting at like 3:02 called Zach. I was like, hey Zach, sorry about it. I hope you're not busy, man. Just quick question. No one called me. What does that mean? He goes, I'll actually never forget this. He goes, yeah, congrats, man. You made the team. And I was like, I got to go. And I was like, yeah, I remember like jumping in the apartment, like, let's go. You know, and I made calls and texts and, you know, yeah, it's funny. I'm glad you asked that because it's not that I'd forgotten it, but it's not like one of those memories I haven't revisited in a while. And it's like a lot of it just came back. Like I can feel how excited I was right now. When he said that, it was so funny too. He's like, yeah, dude, you made it. And he's like, I know it's bad. No news, good news. And I was like, cool, man. Yeah. See, I gotta go.
That was so crazy to me. And the gravity of that, and feeling that as a parent who's been on the front row with you, that was hard. Like, because if you didn't make the free agent, it was over.
I got to experience that. Yeah.
I remember you texting us and saying, yeah, I made the team. And we were at Rick and DB Jackson's house for dinner. You know, we were watching a football game. And I just excused myself. I went into their backyard and I bawled my eyes out. And everybody knew that's what I was doing, so they just left me alone. Yeah.
Well, thank you for the support.
Absolutely, because then it was like, oh, he has a chance now. Mm-hmm. Even though it's uphill, he has a chance now.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it gets me emotional too when I think about it. And, you know, we were very invested parents in your journey. We had been to every game, home and away.
Didn't miss one.
Didn't miss a single one.
Didn't miss one.
All the way through your collegiate career. Even when you redshirted as a freshman, when you were injured, we were still at every game, home and away, and all the bowl games. How many total games did we go to, Chris?
I believe it ended up being 60.
Wow.
That was for just college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't, I mean, Lord knows.
We lost count.
Yeah, who's counting, right?
Panthers versus Terriers.
No. That's a deep cut.
Yeah.
That's rec league. That was seventh grade. That's second grade football, everybody. Second grade football.
By the way, you know, I'm the opposite in terms of remembering the games. That was Panthers 14, Terriers 7.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's just pretty constant for all of you. Chris remembers way more about every single game than I could barely tell you any detail of like any game, even in like 2015. You know, we won, I knocked some people down, or we lost, and I still knocked probably a few people down. You know, and probably fought for my life to not give up a sack. So that's, I remember those, you know, I remember all these little things, like some of our trick plays. We had a trick play to, or like a 2-point conversion play where we throw it, like the tackle was eligible and throw it to the tackle. And, I remember, John Ferranto was the tackle, great friend of mine. Mm-hmm. I love my offensive line rooms. I got so lucky. But it was fun. We called him, you know, his nickname was Thunderbird. I can't remember why. Something about when he came, he was from New Jersey. It just felt right. So we started calling him. He's still in my phone as Johnny Thunderbird. So like we'd call him T-Bird, right? And so we had to play for T-Bird. And it worked. Like we had the tackle pass and he had to battle for it. He brought through a tackle to convert the 2-point conversion. But shout out Caleb Peterson for the holding call. He got called back. Yeah. It's still a score in my book, John.
Yeah, that's right. Caleb made up for it.
Seriously.
With tons of other good games.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it is post NFL career and you have transitioned first into software engineering and now into software sales, which is a significant shift from what you were doing before. What inspired your career pivot and how do you leverage the lessons you've learned from the football experience and journey?
Well, I got cut. that's a pretty big inspiration. unemployment.
Not a lot of deliberation involved on your part. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the crisis
of the decision? Yeah. No. Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. That was low hanging fruit. That was low hanging fruit. I could tell. You know, I'd played long enough and I'd hopped around teams long enough to kind of like, I really truly felt like I could see, like even when I was getting called in for workouts, like I could tell within an hour of walking into the facility that morning, whether or not this was like real. You know, and even when I was on a team, I could tell, like I could start to like see, you know, that's the thing too, you know, and NFL, you guys aren't like slick, just... One, if I had any advice, like, I don't know if it's changed, just be real. Just say it. Just say it in front. Like, you're not holding cards and you're also not like, I can see the cogs moving by the time I was done, you know, so much so like a couple of stories, like the Saints called me back on a Tuesday in 2018, called me back on a Tuesday, both the guards, you know, weren't healthy and they were in trouble. It's like, what are we going to do? Like, we don't have enough, you know, and they're probably like, well, Landon knows the system and we know his capabilities. We know he can play. I mean, they told me to my face, like, you're a starting guard in this league. So I get the call. I come in Tuesday. I work with the ones all week, right? Preparing to play, ready to play. Friday night, I'm in my hotel room. So I don't have my apartment anymore because it kind of got cut. So I'm in the hotel room. And I get the call from player personnel. And I just, like, immediately, like, the sec I looked at my phone and I started packing because I know how this goes. What, Terry Fonda, why are you calling me right now? Right. I answer the phone. He's like, hey, Elaine. I was like, yeah, man, let's cut to it. He's like, hey, like, I remember I was, you know, in this isn't anything personal against Terry, but I just remember getting so angry because I was like, Terry, send me home right now. Like, get my plane out tonight. Nah, man, we got to do that. They got to do, like, the extra exit physical. And then I went home. I was like, Terry, I don't care. Like, give me a plane out of New Orleans back to Durham tonight. And I argued with him for like 5 minutes and he just like wasn't having it. And he was like, hey, if you want to come in and talk about it, you can do that while you know, before your exit thing. And I did. And I mean, I'll spare all of you. It was a wasteful conversation. I don't think he was being 100% with me. And he's like, you told me like, you're a starting guard, so you just got to find the right spot in the right place. And I was like, I'm kind of sitting in it, dude. Like, you know, like, and I get it. It's competitive and it's tough, but that I could start to see those kinds of moves ahead of time. You know, and I think really, like, and shout out to the Seahawks. I think there was the one team that was the most, And honestly, on this podcast, I might as well, this didn't make me mad. Like, I was a bigger person. So they always like, gave me like a hard time for like not being able to run, or like I was always one of the best conditioned guys on the team. I stand by that. I'll stand on that now. And like the Ravens had me come in for a workout and I did 15 minutes individual. I was the only lineman there. So me and the coach on the bag for 15 minutes. I had 4 minutes to rest and then I ran the conditioning test, which I needed my inhaler for. It was 150 yard shuttles. Mm-hmm. Not the easiest,
right?
But I gutted it out, passed. You know, I know I had friends on the team. I know they had at least three or four guys that didn't even pass a conditioning test fresh, right? Get in there, the head scout's like, hey man, we're not gonna go with you today. You know, your conditioning was okay. I cut him off. I was like, and I like started like cussing him, laying into, I couldn't take it anymore. I was like, don't you dare. Like, I was like, don't you dare tell me, look me in my eyes, tell me my conditioning is just okay. Like, just tell me what it is. Those are your guys. And yeah. I was here to scare somebody.
Yeah.
I've done this before. I've done this a lot. Right. So like, you know, kind of wasting both of our times here. And it's kind of ridiculous. So that was, I could start to see those. Like, I was with the Vikings. I was actually home. I was in Burlington having dinner with my ex and her parents. And I get like a call from the Minnesota number. And I was like, I'm literally like, I'm at dinner. We're like eating hot dogs. And I go, hold on, I'm about to get fired. They're like, what? Like, what? I was like, yeah, just give me a second. I was like, hey, he was like, hey, Lane, did you, quick question, did you leave anything? I was like, backpack, but I don't care, man. He's like, all right, cool. Unfortunately, I'm gonna let you go. Don't worry about flying back to Minnesota, because I was like out for, I was there. I was back in North Carolina for the bye week.
Right.
And I was like, all right, man, cool. Whatever, you know. So it would, I forgot what we even actually started. That was all a very long winded context skill of mine for like my transition, like out into sales, or not even into sales, into software development. I ended up shadowing at this tech company, sports tech company, called Teamworks. Mm-hmm. They're a logistics platform, SaaS. We're an operating system now. I still have equity, so still we.
Go Teamworks.
I mean, they ended up letting me go too, but like, I still have like great rapport. Like, that was a pure like business thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not like, it wasn't personal. Yeah. I'm also like glad too, because, you know, like I liked coding a lot. But I'll get to that. So I shadowed there, obviously got along well with the sales team, you know, go figure, football guy gets along with sales, But also, like, I did an aptitude test. I did well with logic. I like puzzles, and I'm a huge nerd. So they were like, you might be a good developer. And it's kind of rare to see, like, athletes that are kind of exposed to developing. In a very long story short, they offered me a full salary and a couple years to work for a couple years. You know, that was the agreement. Like, we'll pay for your coding school if you will invest in this, if you like come in and work for us for 2 years. And I was like, you know what, that's a good plan. And that I'm glad I made that move because it gave me something. That was also like right before the pandemic too. So I really can't imagine going through the whole like NFL workout process. Because, I mean, you don't get paid if you're not on a team. So you try to go practice squad long enough, you know, you got to start stretching that. Yeah. Pay, it pays well if you can stay around, you know, pays if it stays. But, yeah. You know, struggling with that. So it was like, you know, this is a good exit point. I'm ready to do something else. You know, if I've been in this for 4 years, banged around a lot, you know, I could play for 8, but I'm not going to keep down this path. So I jumped head first. I'd studied sport admin in English in college. Mm-hmm. I had no CS degree, no coding experience at all. I had a book that they gave me and I read a little bit and I messed around with some code stuff. And, you know, I was working part time at their, like, testing their application when I wasn't like trying out like for teams and stuff. So I had some exposure to like the company, a good relationship with all of them. And I was starting to like play around with some JavaScript stuff. So I had like a loose understanding, but I did that coding school for 8 months while working full time, passed, and dove headfirst into being a full stack web developer.
Yeah, this journey is really that you've been on is not unusual for a lot of the collegiate athletes that have the ability and the talent to play in the NFL. Yeah. The media, and of course, you know, published articles, they focus on the Tom Brady's of the world and that type of thing. Have you found like-minded athletes like yourself or other athletes who've gone through a similar process as yours encouraging? Have you guys found each other? Have you talked about your experiences and what can you say or share about that?
Not in the way that you're presenting it. No.
Okay.
No, I mean, I met a lot of guys, that were, it's an iceberg, right? The NFL is an iceberg. The people you think of in the NFL is the top of it.
Right. Drew Brees.
Yeah. And the rest of, you know, the meat grinder is the bulk underneath. Mm-hmm. My case is more common than, you know, I mean, it's not like, that's it's right. All the things like, we all know, like anyone who follows the sports, even in some capacity knows like NFL stands for not for long. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is the case. This is always a possibility. You know, it's nothing to be taken personal. Mm-hmm. It could be handled better. Obviously I think it could be handled a lot better with a lot more transparency and honesty. You know, I don't know if that's a cultural thing or a societal thing, but just like, man up, say what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, Seahawks would do that. Shout out to the Seahawks. Thanks, Marty.
and thank you from mom too.
Yeah, you know, just be straight. But yeah, like there isn't like a community. There's a Taj Deshaun. I'll shout out him. I was thinking about working. I just didn't have like the capacity or like time to do it really. But like, I've seen an increase of, you know, he has a podcast about transitioning out of sports. Like, I've seen an increase. I don't know if there's not a defined community like that, but there are like lots of us talking about it.
That's good.
And we understand each other. Right. And there's a lot of guys that I played with in those circles, you know, I can think of 3 or 4 off the top of my head that like every once in a while reach out and check in on them. Cause we had a shared experience, you know, and it's also like part of it's the nature of it, right? Like I'm not, you know, any bitterness that I had to work through was less about like, oh, like I deserved it more. Like that thing with the NFL, like even practice is brutal. Like the games are rough because there's no, like literally every play has to be your best play. Every play does. Cause everyone else is like just as good. Like everyone else there is freakishly good. Like this, the talent gap, like it's, you know, similar. It's the thing that cracks me up when people are like, you know, like, wow, like, you know, it was a good, like Zach Wilson sucks. Zach Wilson is closer to Tom Brady than 99.9% of anyone watching those games.
Right. Yeah.
You're free to say that,
right.
But yeah. Just know it's like, it's a ludicrous statement on paper,
right.
You know? So, that's like the realm when there's only 53 spots. Yeah. Right. So sometimes the chips won't fall your way. Right. Yeah. Even if you like, a lot of guys deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? I deserved it. I was confident enough for it. A lot of guys did.
Yep.
There's a series of factors like where it just might not fall on you. Like, and all you can do is like, you know, this is a consistent lesson I learned in H level. It's like all you can do is show up and control what you can control.
Mm.
Right? All you can do is put yourself at the table, right? And let the chips fall as they may, you know? And the real bitter killer is like making sure that you can look back and say like, yeah, I turned all the stones that I could.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there was nothing that I did to like leave money on the table.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And feel good about that.
Yeah.
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 That's a lot of transition. I'm thinking about like, so you're almost 31 and at your age, most people's transition in life is like, yeah, I went from high school to college, then college to my first job and maybe my second job. You've been like high school to college football, college to pro football, 53-man roster pro football to practice squad to, as you were pointing out, bouncing around, you know, for temporary.
Road warrior.
Then of all transitions, pro athlete to software engineer and now software engineer to salesperson.
Yes.
So that's more transition at your stage of the game than anybody can imagine. Is there any like, and some of it's positive and some of it's challenging.
Sure.
Is there any like takeaways that you would sort of, that you have for dealing with transition and change from all of those different experiences?
Yeah, that's a great question, and the short answer is yes, you know, and a lot of it goes back to like, it's even like my current company, like, you know, extreme ownership is like an important value, right? I think extreme ownership, you know, I'm laughing because like, you know, corporate America, like they got some stuff right sometimes. You know?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
extreme ownership is what stands out, you know, and what I mean when I say that is like, the key to like transitions is there's a few, and I'll get through these, I promise. Making sure that you're doing everything that you can, because there is so much that you can't control, right? And as long as you take care of your own things, what you're facing, it might fall through. But if you put yourself in a position to be there, then more doors are going to open, right? Like that door might fall through, but because you've been dotting your T's and crossing your I's, like you won't see a falter. That door just closes and you got to turn around and move in a different direction, you know? Or you could just stare at the door and die. Like, you know, that's like, which leads me to like the second part, you know, is I'm going to shout out Avatar: The Last Airbender. Huge fan of the show. One of the best world building experience, like examples that exist. And there's a character in that show. It's Uncle Iroh. He's supposed to be like the wise, like Yoda type. And he's like talking with the main character, or I think it's the main character, or like he's talking with one of the characters, and they're going through a long tunnel, and like the character's struggling with something. He's like, you know, life's like this long tunnel. If you just keep going, you'll find yourself in a better place, right? And that's the other pillar of this is like, what choice do you have? You know, when you're faced with a transition, given circumstance, if you've done the first part of extreme ownership, then like, what choice do you have, right? You absolutely, you can still like lament and reflect and be upset and bitter. But if you just stay in it, then like you just die, you know, like, and I'm being extreme in that, but like, if I just didn't transition, no one was going to there wasn't going to be a NFL guard, like right guard position, just magically materialized, right? Like that door shut. And I could keep going. You can keep trying. And if that's what it looks like, if that's what the transition looks like, where you just keep trying, you know, and go USFL, that's fine. But I had other doors open and I decided to walk through those.
Yeah.
And then that's leads me to the third pillar of this, where it's like, it's very scary and difficult, and it feels like just strange sometimes too, to just take a leap on this thing. But sometimes it's like, we can really, there's a sunk cost fallacy is what this is really about, where it's like, man, if I like do this, but you might be holding yourself back from something like incredible, you know, and development's a great, my most recent anecdote, you know, I got laid off in October of 2023. We didn't hit the sales numbers we needed to, was my understanding. So there was some of us cut off. It happens all the time. And I was sitting there and I just was scrambling to try to find a developer job because that's what I had been doing. And when those were difficult and those fell through, took the holidays, came back to visit you all, and took some time to think about it. And I wasn't really happy working as a developer. And it gave me time to think about why that was. And looking back at it, it's like, and I do love coding. I still have projects that I work on. But I was sitting there because coding was my job. I would be in my office coding for like 4 or 5 hours, you know, at a time. You know, I'd like have a meeting in the morning, code for a couple hours, go work out, come back, finish the day, you know, just grinding in my code editor. And it was like, it was still fun to like do all those things, but it was very monotonous. And every week was like, deliver this. Cool. Thanks, man. Deliver us the next thing. Cool. Thanks, man. And that's, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But for those who know me, those who don't, I'm an extremely socially driven person.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I would say that is absolutely correct.
Genuinely getting cabin fever. Also, like my office at home has no windows. It's like a finished storage thing, which don't get me wrong, I loved. You know, it's like my own little bat cave, if you will.
Yeah.
But doing that for like 8 hours a day, 5 times a week, started to get a little
old,
right? And like started to ruin the sanctity of home too. And I was starting, and I was feeling that. And these are all things that I was realizing more retroactively. Like I knew I wasn't like pumped with just where I was at. And, you know, even like I would stare at my code editor for like 5 to 10 minutes with the cursor, like just bing, bing, looking like a zombie. Like, all right, I really need to do this thing. I really need to build this feature out for travel. I really need to fix this bug. All right. And I'd have to like literally it would take time to like work myself up into doing like this work. And I just realized like, you know, maybe that's not it. And I had some conversations like with the CEO of Teamwork. So we got lunch, you know, just because I wanted, he was a sales adjacent guy. I wanted to talk to him about it, you know, and a lot of my friends said I'd be good at sales. And like, we had a really good discussion. And he gave me a lot of good tips, and I realized like, well, I've got all this developer experience, and you know, like if I was going to get into sales, like now is the time. I think I'd be good at it. I have like a technical acumen that I can really apply and be a huge asset to some software sales company. And it was like, if I kept just being like, well, developer was like the path I've chosen. Right. If I had just been like, well, it's too late. It's too late to pivot. You know, and that's the discussion that we had. He's like, I remember he told me, he's like, hey, sometimes you got to jump in the mud. Right. I had a pride issue. If I wanted to pivot, I was going to have to take a pay cut. You know, and I was like, well, nah, like I can handle development. Like I had this thing. But the reality was that thing wasn't for me anymore. Like it didn't fit anymore. Like the tides had shifted. Right. And, like that door had closed, and the rest of them that were similar to it just wasn't, none of them felt right, fit right, you know? And if I wanted to like grow and move on, then if that had to like, it took a minute to be like, oh, I might have to take just a little mini step back to get many steps forward. So I think that covers it. Yeah. I feel like I talked a lot there.
And you've been in sales now
I have been in sales. How many months? What is today? Today is the 11th.
That's right, May 11th.
Yeah, month and a half.
All right.
Month and a half of salesman.
Okay.
Big sales guy.
Big sales guy. It seems like you're having a good time.
Yeah. Any product? You. Yeah. Any product managers or VPs of products? You know, CPOs listening to this podcast. Got something to help you.
Oh, hit me up. Oh, there you go. Yeah,
Landon.Turner@pendo.io.
Pendo.io?
Dot .io.
All right. P-N-D-O.
Let me help you with product cycle.
Okay.
Get some real user analytics.
We'll put that link in the show notes.
Yeah, honestly, dude, just in case.
Okay, in I case. Will.
I think my manager would get a kick out of it. It's like, hey, man, I got a couple leads.
What's your manager saying?
Jackson.
Jackson, we will put that link in the show notes.
Justifies us using their building to film this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. We're actually like not up on the floor because I wasn't sure what the policy was. So I wasn't like 100%, but we did use the building, and you know, we did run into a security guy, but he seemed cool.
Right.
With it was 3 minutes into a shift, probably just like I played it real cool for sure. I say that as if there was actually any. No one cares. Nobody cares. It's fine.
Yeah, and we're having fun. This next question, I'm really curious to hear your answer to. So your mom made a career shift herself.
Mm-hmm. You've made quite a few.
I have made quite a few, and the most recent is a comedian, mm-hmm. which I've been doing for 7-ish plus years now.
Wow.
Crazy, right? Yeah. So doing stand-up comedy and Legend. Producing shows, doing this podcast. Now your stepdad is also... Chris here doing stand-up comedy, which adds another layer of depth to your family story.
Indeed.
How has my pursuit of comedy influenced your perspective on embracing new challenges and opportunities?
I think it has a lot. You know, I often tell people, it's like, yeah, you're inspired. First of all, you are inspiring.
Oh, you are. Thank
Look
you.
At you. Look at us. We're sitting here.
I don't even know all what I'm doing, but we're doing it.
Okay, folks, I don't know what all I'm doing. We sit here, I've got a mic stand.
Yeah, man.
Okay, a high professional grade mic stand.
Thank you.
I can hear myself in these headphones.
Yeah.
It's pretty smooth.
A little legit.
We've got a thing I don't know how to use or handle,
I just know the right buttons.
I'm a software guy, not a hardware guy.
Yeah.
And we got a camera sitting here mm-hmm. in Raleigh, North Carolina.
That's true.
Talking about I don't know. Stop it. Anyway, no, it's been inspiring. And one of the things I always remember you saying, because this goes back, this is actually before your comedy thing, but this was the primer to mm-hmm. it. It was like my senior year, junior year. I don't remember as well. A little CTA, it's fine. You had talked about like how you'd always wanted to be an actress, mm-hmm. and you started to like get into acting again. And you're even an extra on House of Cards. Mm-hmm. Shout out, extra on Turn, right?
Not Turn, Veep.
Veep, that's mm-hmm. what it was.
Yeah.
Dang. Veep, yes. you know, and I remember I don't know if you remember saying this, but I remember you telling me, I was like, well, yeah, you chased your dream and it inspired me to chase mine, mm-hmm. you know? And so now look at us just circularly inspiring each other.
That's true.
So I think it did have no influence, you know, and you are truly, happy Mother's Day, you are truly one of the most resilient people that I know. So
yeah,
I get it from somewhere.
So too. Yeah.
Yeah, we're just transitioning fans. Yeah. I'd like to get off the ride now.
It'd be good for a second or two, wouldn't it?
I am resilient
small
enough.
World. Take a turn on small world for a second. Yeah.
I would like to be taken off the strongest soldiers list, please.
We have
just checking
in
with
it.
The big man up there. Like, yeah, we good? Have I grown up? Just give me a couple seasons, you know. Maybe season 8 we get back into, into some drama. Yeah. We need some filler episodes, please.
Lord. Yes, we've both been through quite a bit in the last few years for sure. I think something that's fascinating about you, a lot of people don't know, and I think I'm going to give this one over to Chris to ask about.
Okay. Yeah. So more lighthearted, you know, we talked a lot about your your professional pursuits. Indeed. But one of the things you like to do as a hobby is you are a big Dungeons and Dragons nerd.
I love it.
And how did you get into that? And when did you get into that? And that's something that I think would surprise a lot of people if they first met you. You know, if somebody met you at a cocktail party, like this is Landon, he's a former pro football player, you know, big guy, you know, and you like, you know, you like doing that. You embrace the role of dungeon master. I don't know much about it. I don't know what you told me, but
throw those dice. I'll turn it to you, dice.
Yeah, lay it on us.
It might be different for other people. I throw the 20-sided dice. Die? Whatever. Yes, I do play Dungeons and Dragons. I'd like to classify myself as a nerdy jock, you know, a wizard who lifts, if you will. So I got into Dungeons and Dragons. You know, I've always been like, always played video games growing up. Like, I've read all the Harry Potter books, read all the Narnia books, read all the Lord of the Rings series. Didn't read The Hobbit till college, which was wild. It didn't even like register for me, but I've always enjoyed like fantasy things. And, you know, so I was a little bit primed for it. You know, and there's even like, I've been a little unapologetic for it. It wasn't until I got to the NFL and like, you know, there was a couple, you know, my buddy Larry Warford, for example, we had some nerds that I was like, all right, like this is all right. Like, not that I was ever like ashamed of it or anything. I just was a little more muted. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, yeah, I'm just going to enjoy it. Like my friend, one of the guys I played college football with, like Lucas Crowley, anytime I post anything D&D, he'll just always like respond to my DMs.
Really?
Like nerd. I'll be like, I'll just like send like the Chad meme or something back. Like, I don't care. It's a fun thing. But I got into it when I was working at Teamworks. I'm actually still in that D&D group. We're still playing an active campaign right now. One of my first manager there in like quality assurance was the dungeon master. And when he saw all that, I was like, Oh, you're a nerd. And I was like, yeah, for sure. And he's like, have you ever tried D&D? I was like, nah, but it sounds kind of cool. He's like, do you want to sit in on a session? I was like, yeah. So I stayed after work on one of the Wednesdays, like kind of hung around the session. He's like, do you want to play? I was like, yeah, I want to play. So I was, started my first campaign. I was an arcane archer. High elf arcane archer was lit.
Okay.
And for those who don't know, D&D is tabletop RPG. I can see it in the eyes.
Like,
so like, before I get too far, let me say
an
what
arcane
it is.
Archer. I was going to ask what that
right.
is.
Right. I know. Okay. Look, there's levels to this. All right.
Okay. All right. Fair.
Yeah. It's a tabletop RPG. You like have character sheets. There are a set of rules. They're more like guidelines. And you know, long story short, it's a collaborative like improv game with your friends. Like you're building out the story. One person plays the role of the dungeon master or game master, depending on whatever game you're playing. And the game master's job is to present, like set the scene, present the scene. And then everybody reacts to it and improvs like what they have based on their character sheet and like what class they are, you know? So our barbarian is going to probably rage and swing an axe. You know, a wizard is stuck in a book, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're going to solve problems with intelligence. And there's like a bunch of guidelines for that. It does seem very cumbersome at first, but it's a very welcoming and very like loose community because it's way more about just like what's fun for you and your friends at the table than it is like, in my experience at least, than it is like perfecting these rules. So traverse like and make up stories with your friends. It's a pretty fun time. Cool. Yeah. So that's what I do. I'm playing in that one as a bard and barbarian, and bards are like singers. So he's basically like a fantasy rock star. So that's a lot of fun. And then as a game master, I'm running a game with some friends in Virginia and Florida. So we'll just do it. We'll do it virtually through Discord with a little video. I got like maps on a website that I show them and I'm explaining what's happening. And I always wear my wizard hat.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Yes, you do. Simple. He had an elaborate game over the holidays that he did with his family, our friends. Yeah.
I also have a pipe.
Okay.
Just for extra effect. I don't use it. I just hold it. Yeah.
That's great. You've been into the fantasy world for longer than that. Yeah. You've written fantasy well, the beginning of fantasy novels, kind of Lord of the Rings type Indeed. Work. And there's always, there's a love story and there's an antagonist. It has a lot of layers.
So many layers.
Yes. And you've
love
been
a
in
good twist.
Yes, you do. Yeah. And you're a really good writer. And then you like anime. Where did your original interest in the fantasy world begin? What inspired all of this?
Okay. One thing I feel like we're boxing a lot is for
let's, my let's nerddom. Not box.
It's not limited to fantasy.
Yeah.
Anime, Star Wars, like love sci-fi, right?
Right.
So I'm more of an all-inclusive nerd for sure.
Okay.
The fantasy stuff, that's hard to say. Like I played a lot of video games growing up.
Yeah.
And I was often like playing and I liked the ideas of like creating a world and like thinking about like what would this be like if mm-hmm. if these set of conditions were true.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's probably where I started. I remember what was that? Third grade. We had this, and I think it's somewhere at home. I think I've like run into it before, but there was like a, I'd recently read Narnia or Lord of the Rings or something.
We used to read that.
Yeah.
Time story. Chronicles of Narnia.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. So that's probably part of that too. But it was the assignment where it's like a creative writing assignment in like third grade. And I remember I wrote like, it's terrible. It's so bad, but it is kind of funny. It's like a classic, like, knight slays dragon, saves princess type of thing, you know? So that's probably where it started, you know? And like, cause it's not just a fantasy thing. Like, you know, Chris, you took me to see Star Wars Episode One.
Yeah.
You know, that was formative. That's a core memory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When Darth Maul lit up both sides of that lightsaber.
Oh, yeah, man.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in. I'm in.
What is this?
Yeah, I'm in.
And I will live my whole life around this. You know? So like I you know, because I had seen like I you know, you'd showed me you'd like Star Wars, so you'd shown me the original trilogy, which is still the best, still my favorite. You know, and even dad, like dad's a big gamer. He always has been. Mm-hmm. Him and I have always shared that. So I've just been like, I've been like nerd adjacent forever.
Nice.
It's a great way to be. And I will never change.
So a lot of different experiences, right? On and off the field. If you were to offer any advice to aspiring athletes, some basic things you'd give them about navigating their own journey?
I think you got to get really good at balancing your dedication, not sacrificing, right? Balancing your dedication with things that interest you. Never lose sight. Like chase it maniacally, but never let yourself lose sight that there's a lot more to you. Like, and I personally think it's a fallacy that these can't exist. Like I do not accept and do not like the, like I'm putting my whole heart and soul into this. It's like, you can do, like there's a diminishing threshold for that. Like you can dedicate most of your time to this. Right. But at some point you got to sleep. Some point you got to rest, you know, and it's not going to be the end of the world if you like identify with more, you know, because it really also helps you like enjoy the process a lot more if you don't put all of these like chips, you know, because the reality is like if you're disciplined, if you have discipline, you can do all the things that you need to do.
People
because
do it all the time,
just to go back to earlier, you can do everything right. And those chips might fall. And that's no way to operate. Don't operate like that. But just understand that, like, hey, as long as I do everything, as long as I don't leave any of the money on the table, right? And I did everything that I could reasonably, then let yourself enjoy the rest of life. You know? I think that like I think we can get real tied up in like, I gotta give everything into this. And like you gotta give a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. Right? But just make sure you gave everything that you had to put yourself in the position you want to be. And anything more than that is just punishing yourself, I think.
Wow. Yeah, I like that. Sounds very sustainable.
Yeah. I like that too. Well, as we wrap up here, that was a good note to end on. So as we wrap up here, how best can the laughers stay updated with you on social media or otherwise, Landon Turner?
So yeah, I will actually, I'm going to take advantage of this as a PSA to friends and family. If you're waiting on a Facebook message from me, I'm sorry. I'm never on Facebook. I'm so sorry. And every once in a while, I'll need to check something in like a family group chat, and I'll see a lot, and I'm like, I'm sorry. Facebook is not a good way to get to me. Instagram is a much better way. I am a millennial, maybe just millennial at heart. I refuse to like fully dive into TikTok. I have the app. If you send me those, sure. But Instagram @Landon_Lewis, LEWIS _ Turner. You'll find me. You can follow me. You can send me memes. Although if they're bad memes, I will ban you. Know that you will be judged. I spend probably a criminal amount of time on Instagram blowing up my friends with reels and memes, and they're welcome for my service.
And what is your Instagram handle?
Oh, I said it.
Oh, you did? I missed it.
Okay. That's okay. It got lost in the meme talk, I understand.
It did. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think there's any other socials. Shameless business plug for, and again, any product manager. I could really use some book meetings. So any product managers, you know, chief product officers.
Yeah.
Anybody who needs some user analytics on in their B2B software, I'm here to help.
Let's go.
Hit me up on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Landon Turner. It's a very outdated NFL mugshot, so you'll be able to find it. Trust me.
Well, thank you so much, Landon. This has been super fun chatting with you about all things pursuing dreams and overcoming adversity and obstacles. Thank you so much for sharing your heart with us and your story today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
It was fun.
Very fun Mother's Day.
Yeah.
By the time
by the time it drops, it'll be after Mother's Day, but I'm glad we got to spend it part of it doing Indeed. This with you. Absolutely. So yeah, thank you again.
That's fair. Yeah. This is recorded on Mother's Day. The day before. I'm keeping track. Son of the year.
And laughers, we want to thank you for tuning into today's podcast of Virginia is for Laughers. If you enjoyed this content and your time with us, please do share this podcast, give it a like, and follow our channel, our new YouTube channel, The Funny Womax, where this podcast is also housed along with anywhere you audibly or listen to it audio version wise. I think you got it. Also, don't forget that discount on Pre-Popsterous Popcorn, where you can use promo code LAUGH15 and save 15% today. Just visit prepopsterous.com. That's PrePopsterous.com. And that way you can munch on it when you join me on next week's episode. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to a FWAF show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to thefunnywomax.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.